This is Financially Fit with Coach Hill, the podcast where you learn to train your money like a pro athlete trains for success. I am Coach Hill, your host and personal finance expert to many people across the U.S. and, of course, my most well-known client, the NFL. Today, I am going to be sitting down with a very good friend of mine who happens to play in the league. I met him in 2019. We were both rookies with the San Francisco 49ers. It was my first year with them and his as well. This was 2019, so we're going to roll the tape back to that time where we met, our story, and where he has gone since being undrafted in 2019. I'm so excited to introduce you to one of my dear friends, someone that I consider family. Welcome, Aziz Alshayer, to the show. Aziz, thank you for being here. We've talked a little about who you are and why you're here, so I would like to dive into you and your story. So let's rewind the tape all the way back. Let's go back to what got you into football so that we can talk about your crazy, crazy, amazing journey.
First off, thanks for having me. Happy to be here. I know it was a little long time coming. But no, honestly, for me, I always loved football. Always watched, played the video games, play Madden, NCAA when it used to be out. And it just was something that I fell in love with. So I started playing. I didn't actually start playing and organized until I was about 13. I could never pay to play. You know, I grew up homeless for a good portion of my life, struggling with my siblings and my family. So I just never had the money to pay for organized sports. But my grandfather had signed me up this year, lied to the coach, told him I was super fast, had hands like Jerry Rice, all this crazy stuff. It was to this day the funniest thing. I love telling this story because It's true. Every word I'm saying is true, but it's just hilarious just how it all played out. So I went out there the first day. The coach pushed me with the oldest group of kids because of what my granddad said. We do Oklahoma drills, and I get ran over. So I remember that. Literally, we did the Oklahoma drills. It was a little white boy with a mohawk. I don't know his name, but I just remember he had a mohawk. I'm talking about he ran me over. That's how I knew, one, I was not trying to play offense no more. So that's how I knew I was going to be a defensive player. But literally, I went home that day, and I quit. Didn't play the rest of the season. I was lying to my grandfather every day, football practice going good. I used to be lying. And I remember going home to my mom crying and, saying, what am I going to do? I thought football was going to be our way out. Really just, hurt and distraught. And I remember she told me, that which is for you should not pass you by. And that which passes you by is not for you. Just all I could do is trust in God, work as hard as I can, and, leave the rest to Him. So that's pretty much what I did, and he fast forward all those years to now be finishing my fifth year in the NFL. It's pretty amazing. I just feel blessed.
Oh, I love it. And we met your rookie season. So a lot of people don't get to hear our stories, how I get to work with you guys. And you and I had a really special bond your rookie season. You would come in. I heard about your story, which we're going to talk about what was happening to you in high school and a little bit in college. But I heard your story and then we started talking about money and I realized we were kindred spirits because of how we operate with money, but also you just have a really good value system. And as we were working with the Niners, and that group's really unique, I think we can both attest to the locker room at the Niners facility is really, really unique and amazing. Shout out to Austin Moss and Shelby and all the people we work with there. Sure. And our Frenchies. We got to give the 49er Frenchies a prop. But there were countless times that we sat in the player engagement lounge together and with other players and with the director and everybody there. And we were just talking about life and money. And that's how I got to learn a little bit about the fact that you grew up homeless and a portion of your life was spent living out of a car with your siblings and your mom. How did that shape what happened to you moving into high school, college, and then you went in the 2019 draft. Technically, you were undrafted, but you were in that class. And we're going to talk about how incredible it is that you went undrafted to where you are now. But what was the thing that really shaped how you think about money? Because you think about it differently than a lot of guys in the locker room.
Yeah, I think as the years have gone on from my rookie year until now, my mindset with money has completely shifted. But all my life, I feel like I just had a scarce mentality where money, only bad people made money. You always hear this stuff where it's anybody who had money where I was from usually was doing something they had no business doing. For me, it's either it's going to be somebody selling drugs, doing something like that, who got all this money, or it's going to be an athlete or something like that. So like you assume that these are only two ways, and you assume that like you gotta sell your soul or something crazy to get money, and like you just always have this scarcity when it comes to money. And so I just constantly, like, as I grew up not having things, you are like kind of like handcuffed to this like emotional attachment where you're like, man, every dollar I can't spend nothing, I gotta save everything. I mean, you know, I was riding the bike for the first 2 years in the
We
league,
gonna talk
like,
about that.
you know what I'm saying? Like, so my whole attachment, or my whole, I guess, thought process with money originally was just like scarce mentality overall, just afraid, you know, afraid to mess up, afraid to go back to, you know, being poor and, you know, struggling, being on the streets and stuff like that. So I just always had that like feeling where I'm just like anxiety, scared, you know, don't want to mess up. I mean, you know how I told you when I first met you. So yeah, I think like as I went through the league and as I was able to talk to you and make that connection and grow, it just changed my perspective with money and how I view that, to whereas now it's more like you realize it's a tool. It's a tool that you use, and as you accumulate all this wealth, using it in the right ways, to where you realize that it's about balance. Like, you don't gotta hold on to every single dollar that you have, because at the end of the day, we all gonna die. So you better at least enjoy it while you're working so hard to make it. But at the same time, you do want to set yourself up, hoping that you don't die at 25. You know, God forbid, and you're able to live a long life, and be able to help set your family up, generational wealth, your family's family, to put them in a better position than you were. So, these are all things that obviously I learned while I got in the league, and I learned a lot of it from you, and just grateful for it for sure.
And you had a lot of really good people around you too that you always leaned on, which I loved because you're a learner. You like to learn. You like to figure out how things are supposed to go. But you're right. You, when I met you, it was a scarcity mentality, which a lot of us have because it's a resource we don't have a lot of. And then when we have it, we don't want to lose it. And you were my like favorite person on the planet when you told me, "I'm not buying a car my rookie year." And I was like, "What are you gonna do?" You're like, "I'm gonna ride a bike." And I said, "Wait, what?" And you're like, "I'm undrafted and I need to make sure I make the team. And I'm gonna ride a bike." And I was like, "More power to you, man. Like, I would be dead after practice. You can have me dead on a bike." But you did that and you did it really well. Oh, are your nieces coming out? Hi,
Yeah,
nieces.
my little nephew.
Oh, hi, little nephew. You want to come in
Oh,
and say hi?
I just die. He's just stay right where he at.
People are
He's gonna
gonna
do homework.
laugh. Fine. But one of the things I appreciated was that you stuck to that your whole rookie season, even though you made the 53, which meant you got the full rookie salary. And I want to preface, you were an undrafted guy, which means no signing bonus, no guarantees of making the team. And fast forward 2019 to where are we? February of 2024. You have played 5 going on 6 years in the league. That is remarkable. There aren't many guys that get that second contract that are undrafted. And you've stuck with that mentality of, I don't want to spend it all. I want to save it. I want to build generational wealth. But you're also very giving. And I saw one of the posts you did, and I want to talk about that because a lot of what you do is giving back to your communities where you live, where you're from. You are proud to be from Florida. You are going to stay in Florida when you're done, all those things. You did something super cool with Campbell's this year. I want you to talk about what inspired you to do that for the woman that you helped and her family.
Yeah, so honestly, just, you know, my whole backstory, everything that I've experienced and endured, and just every year since I was a rookie in San Francisco, I remember we all had like a thing, you know, in the NFL they do gift exchange with the guys, and I remember like giving the guys a hard time, like, I ain't buying none of y'all no gift, like, all y'all got money, I got more money than me, like, we could buy whatever we want. So, you know, for me it was more so like, I would rather, like, what do you get somebody who can buy everything for themselves, you know? So it's like, for me, I just started telling the guys, like, why don't we start doing gifts for families instead, for other people instead. So, you know, we ended up started doing that from my first year all the way. They still do it even now, even though I'm not there anymore. But, you know, the linebackers, they still get together, get families from the community relations team. They find, you know, underserved families, and they provide them with all the gifts and everything around the holiday time and Thanksgiving as well. So it was just something that I've done since I was a rookie, ever since I had the means to do it. So being able to have that partnership with Campbell's, I utilized that as well as being able to get, that family some gifts and things like that. But just giving her the free food for the whole year, like, it's just something that even I don't care what it is, you know, whether it's soup all year, whether it's fruit, whatever it might have been. But like just that one more weight off of your shoulders to not have to think about, am I going to have to starve, you know, this next day or whatever. And, you know, she endured a lot, her and her two kids, you know, they experienced a lot. I've never been big on like publicizing those type of things, because I know for me being in that situation, the last thing I wanted or would want is somebody to put a camera in my face as they were doing me a favor. Mm-hmm. But I think it brings a lot of awareness to a lot of people, you know, and really like humbles you when you're watching and you're realizing like, bro, people are going through so much in this world. And, you know, the way that she was so like grateful and so happy, you know, like that's something that, I mean, it's just infectious. And that's the same mentality that my mother had, even though we were going through all the things we were going through. So, you know, that's just something that's very, very close to my heart, giving back to people in need and doing for others. Because, you know, I just think that that's just, at the end of the day, when you're long gone, people aren't going to remember the clothes you wore or what chain you had, but they'll remember, you know, how you made them feel. So that's what I try to focus on the most.
Which is one of the things I think is so wonderful about you. You've never lost that. It's been who you are from day one and watching your journey and being a part of it. And when I saw that, I went, oh my gosh, they're finally highlighting what you do, because people don't get to see the good stuff you do. And that's, they see you on Sunday or on Monday night, but they don't see the things that you're doing to give back to the community. And I think it's so important we highlight that, not because it's a bragging moment, but because there's mm-hmm. good things that good people are doing for people that deserve it. And yeah. just like you went through struggles, your mom was your rock. She's your person. She always has been. Your brothers and sisters. I mean, when you go through hard times, and all of us go through that in different ways, you really bond to those people. And I think what you're doing to support some of the things you've truly experienced in life, because not everybody can say, I experienced homelessness. Most yeah. of us can't say that. I know I can't say that. I can't even imagine truly what that would be, but you lived it. And to be able to say, I lived it, I pushed through it, here's how I overcame it, and here's the people that helped me. And now I'm going to go and make it easier for someone else in life to not have to deal with those burdens. That's a really big thing. And it's coming out of your own pocket, which is what a lot of people don't realize. They think, oh, somebody sponsored it, right? No, not usually. It's coming out of your own pocket.
Yeah, I think that's probably something that like I've kind of took my own pride in. It's just like, obviously I'm not, hey, yeah, I paid for that myself. I'm not telling anybody that. But whenever I'm doing anything that I'm doing, a lot of times it's never highlighted because I don't want it to be highlighted. I want to do it out of the kindness of my heart. Obviously, with having that sponsorship that I had with Campbell's, you know, out of respect for them and what mm-hmm. they were doing, because that was something that they were also collaborating with me in as well as Ashley's Furniture. And just wanted to make sure that all those people were highlighted. And so it didn't seem like it was just me. Yeah. But for the most part, you know, things that I've done, I never even want anybody to know about it other than the person I've helped. Because at the end of the day, like I said, I see myself when I see a lot of these families and a lot of these kids. And like I said, the last thing I wanted in those moments would be somebody like showing somebody else that I'm the one that's struggling or needing the help, because it truly is like a, you know, sometimes it was hard for me to even talk about my story. I was embarrassed for the longest until I was able to overcome it. And it's easier to speak up when you overcome the thing, where there's so many people who are in the midst of their struggle, and, you know, people make fun of them or like they might be clowning or whatever. But once you overcome it, I think is where you start to have more like empowerment to speak up, to let people who know who are going through it still that, you know, just because you're going through what you're going through doesn't mean you're not worth nothing or you won't make it out. So, yeah.
And that's why I love when you share your story, because you have overcome it and you've been able to help people. And I think there's so much good that's done in the world that's never highlighted, but we always hear about the bad, right? We always hear about all of the bad things, and we need to know the bad. We need to know what's happening, but we don't highlight a lot of what families are struggling with here in the country, in our country, where we live every single day. And there's so many problems worldwide. We both have sat down and talked about what's happening in the Middle East right now and all of those things. And we won't get into politics, but we both agree there's got to be some help somewhere. But we forget about Americans some of the time, because it's, you know, we're out here trying to fix the world and we don't always do it very well. But then we forget we've got people back home that are struggling just as much as people in other countries. And in order to bring light to what that looks like and to be able to say, hey, you know, we've got 33% of the population of kids who could potentially be going to bed without a meal. That's scary to think about. 100%. That's really scary to think about.
Especially knowing like how much food we waste on a daily basis, just is insane. So
right. And so when you did that, I actually watched that when it was on your Instagram, and I had tears coming down my face, not because I'm like, oh, go Aziz, but I was like, people are going to see the things we need, and men like you can bring that to light and bring positive, bring change. And it comes from the best possible place. And I think that's what's missing in the media, in my opinion. Media might come after me for that, but they like to highlight, oh, an NFL player. I'm like, wait, look at the person. Look at him as a person. Let's talk about his journey, what he did, why he's doing. He's not doing it for the camera roll. He's doing it because he wants to. But I loved that you got to highlight that and people got to see you, not Mr. Aziz on the field who makes people, squishes people, literally squishes people. So I thought that was beautiful. And I love that you are paying it forward. And I think that's a really important message.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we've talked a lot about communication with money, you and I, over time and what that looks like. And one of the things I think that is most empowering about you is how you talk to people. So especially I'm thinking locker room. So when I say people, I mean the guys in the locker room. I love this question because I think it's very honest. If you were a rookie in the NFL now, what is the one thing you would tell every rookie that comes into your, and I'm sure you do this already, but when the rookies come in, what do you tell them?
Man, just from the financial perspective, and really, I mean, it can kind of go into everything, but mostly I think the biggest thing about the NFL when you're coming from college is everybody wants to be the player that can buy their mom a house right out the gate. Everybody wants to be the player that can pull up in, you know, $200,000 car, $100,000 car, $50,000 watch on, chain. Like, everybody wants all those things, you know, but you got to stay in your lane. You know, at the end of the day, I've seen so many guys get to the league and they're trying to live out that dream that they saw on Instagram from, you know, the big homie or somebody else doing it. Or you see, you know, you walking in the locker room, you know, I'm coming in the locker room as a rookie. I'm around guys who are making millions and millions of dollars. You know what I'm saying? I never forget Quan Alexander. He's like a big brother to me. And like my rookie year was his first year in Tampa. He just signed a $50+ million contract. And I remember the first game of the season, he gets ejected. And like, you know, you always hearing about these fines. And I'm like, okay, he's getting a 28K fine. Like, boy, his whole check is gone. Like, I'm not even thinking, like, he's getting 50 M's, like 28K to his check. I never forget. Like, I'm clowning him because I'm like, damn, boy, like, you missing a lot of money, boy. Your paycheck gonna be hurting. I remember that Monday, we used to get the pay stubs, I think, on that Wednesday or Thursday at the time. I can't remember. But I remember he showed me the pay stub. And it was like, look, bro, I make way more money than that. And it was like over a $300,000 check. So it's like, just that perspective, you was like, damn. Like, I mean, my checks at the time were $11,000, which is still crazy money just in general. But, you know, from a football perspective, like, those are literally two broad gaps. Like, he almost made in one check my whole salary at the end of the season. So I just realized early that, you know, everybody is where they are because of how they, and you know, because of how they worked and what they did to get there. I just use it all as motivation, and it's like, you know, that's the blueprint. Like, okay, how did you get that? This man got $50 million. Like,
how'd you do it?
Fourth round pick. How'd you do it? You know, so I just soaked up the game from everybody. You know, I learned from so many guys. You know, it was a lot of undrafted guys that I learned from even when I was in San Francisco. You talk about Raheem Mostert. You know, Kendrick Bourne. Even guy like Matt Breida. Like, it was a lot of guys when I was in San Francisco that I looked up to, and not just undrafted, but, you know, just to highlight some other undrafted players who I saw, like, on the path that I was trying to go down. And so, like I said, the biggest thing I did was just stay in my lane. So the one thing I always tell rookies is, like, look, now you see me with the $200,000 car, I promise you, like, I'll tell you the story. I still got the bike. It's still over there in Santa Clara. If you go to the team facility, they still got it chained up, locked. I don't know where the key is. The janitor, somebody got to throw that bike away. But, you know, I had that bike for 2 years, and, you know, I'm in the NFL. I remember leaving the stadium. Ain't nobody even stopping me because they're thinking I'm just, like, an equipment guy or something. Like, there's no way an NFL player is leaving the stadium on a bike. So it took
I remember
them, like, a
watching
while
you
to realize.
Leave. I watched you leave a playoff game on your bike.
Yeah.
I was like, is that Yep. Okay.
That's why I said at first it was cool because ain't nobody ever stopped you because they like there's no chance, you know, NFL player, you making all this money and you riding the bike. But, you know, I stayed close enough and I'm like, you know, I'm trying to save my money. Like I said, I took it to the extreme, no question. But at the same time,
you didn't have a car for 2 years though. So yeah. If you wanted to take it to the extreme, you earned it.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying as far as like riding a bike for 2 years is probably a little OD. But at the same time, that was just like, you know, where I was. And I stayed right behind the stadium, so it wasn't a far ride. And I wasn't really, my ego was never big enough to think, oh man, I got to make sure everybody sees me in the nicest car. Like I said, I just focused on staying in my lane and the things that I liked, I got. And if I didn't like it, I wasn't going to do it. So
I love that you always stayed in your lane and you didn't let the hype and the things around you kind of mask that. And playing for the Niners, I mean, being in the Bay, it's expensive to start. And you're on a team that's, you know, one of the original storied teams in the league. And there's your draft class was silly. Your draft class, my rookie class with the Niners was silly. You had, man, we had such good guys. We still have guys in the locker room that are there that were in that draft class. D-Flan, shout out D-Flan. I know you too. I saw the picture of you guys as rookies. Austin has it on his phone. Man, my two undrafted rookies that always sat in the front row and sucked up everything. And now look at you. I mean, amazing. But that draft class was crazy. You had a lot of really strong men in that class that have gone on to sign massive contracts. And yeah, you hung with all of them and you learned with all of them. And now you guys, look at where you guys all are now. I think it also has to do with who you surround yourself with and who you choose to surround yourself with, like your big brother, the guy you call your big brother, and how you decided to learn from him. And I think a lot of young athletes, men and women, can take your story and say, who do I make my mentor? Who do I learn from? How do I learn from that person to be that much better? Because anyone who's anyone in business, in sports, in life, I can promise you they have a mentor in some capacity. 100%. And I know one of your mentors was one of your coaches, right? At the Niners?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Johnny Holland. He's still like a father figure to me. But, you know, he's somebody that I would go over to his house in the summertime, sit out there. I used to be sitting there barbecuing, talking. Like, I mean, it just felt like home. I was, you know, thousands of miles away from home. I had never left Florida other than when I was in college to go fly and play a game and then come back home. So that was the first time I was really away from my family. And, like, he just, you know, it felt like home. He reminded me of my grandfather, my dad, and, you know, just like that. It was that same type of feel. So it was somebody that I admired a lot. Same thing even with D'Amico Ryans. Like, I was really blessed just – the people that I had around me were so solid, and not just my linebacker room, but, you know, just the whole team. Like, you know, those are guys that will forever be, like, you know, brothers to me, family to me, just because of the relationships that we built. Obviously, when you're winning, everybody's like, oh, I love you guys. But, I mean, like, truthfully, just day in and day out basis, all the things we endured, you know, all the tears you shed together and conversations that you have, where these are guys that, you know, you still call and talk to. Like, I'm talking to Johnny Holland before my games, like he's still my coach. You know, it was just some of the connections that you build that are really deep. And, you know, that connection I built with Johnny, I really did look up to him. And he used to always tell me, like, hey, man, you're going to be special. You're going to be special. And
he's not wrong. He's right.
No, for sure. Like I said, I just had to be patient at the same time. So he definitely helped me throughout that whole process, just being away from family and, you know, just trying to navigate my way through the league. You know, me, Flan, and Dre, you know.
Dre. Forgot he was in your rookie class too, huh?
That's what I'm saying. So,
oh, man. You know, and then Devo and Nick, the five
exactly,
of you.
Exactly. So, you know, me, Flan, and Dre, like, just being the three linebackers, we were always around each other trying to figure it out. And, you know, I'll never forget, we had some tough days where we're like, man, you ready to quit. Like, you're literally at the highest level, but, you know, you just mentally, it's so exhausting and can be so much. And, you know, me and Dre especially just got really close when it came to, you know, family situations and stuff like that, just connecting on those type of levels. So we were able to, like, help each other and guide each other kind of through navigating through the family, you know, dynamics and how to, you know, how to say no and what to say. Oh, I got that financial advisor. Like, I never forget you told me that line too. Like, hey, tell them you got a financial advisor and they got to call them. And so I did all type of stuff to maneuver around, but yeah.
And I love that locker room. I will say there's something unique about every locker room in the NFL, and everybody says, you know, who's your favorite team? I always get asked the question, who's your favorite team? And I don't have a favorite team, but I can tell you that there were special locker rooms. There were years where those locker rooms were really special, and I would walk in and it wasn't work. It was just sitting down and shooting the shit. And between 2019 and 2020, when we were allowed in the buildings prior to COVID, being at the Niners facility, I feel like I was down with you guys every 3 weeks.
I know. I remember literally you were always down there.
Oh, I mean, because Austin's awesome. Like, I need awesome. You to come back. I'm like, okay, yeah. I'm here. But we would just sit around and hang out, and, you know, D-Flan would be there. Dre would pop in. Debo would do his thing and pop by and then, you know, make fun of somebody and leave because that's just, he's a clown and we love him. And then the older guys would come in and we'd, I remember, I think it was Richard Sherman walked in once and said something really just off the wall and walked out, and everybody just turned and looked. And I was like, oh yeah, we're here today. Okay, we're here for it.
That sounds about Rich.
Right. So, that what people don't realize is what we get to do. And when I get to work with you guys is they think I just go in and I say something for 45 minutes and I leave. And that is what I technically do on paper. But what it really is just learning about you, learning how you think about money, what you think about money, and then who you are as a person so I can help you. And your story, you knew this from day one, resonated with me so much just because you've gone through a lot in your life. I've gone through losing a parent. We've both dealt with that. We've both dealt with a lot of different things, the people closest to us. And I thought, you know, we got to hear Z's out on this. People got to hear him. So we've talked a lot about finance. We've talked a lot about teams, your mentors, which are so key and important. But for you, if you are to talk about anything financially that you've learned from anyone you've worked with, what is the best piece of advice anyone has ever given you about money?
Man.
Hard question, right?
Yeah, it is hard because I feel like I got like a couple things I could think of.
Then give me both.
I mean, I know that for one thing is like, it's a mentality. Like making money, once you get to this level or you get to that level in whatever field that you're in to where you got the formula to make it, you know, like that's not the hard part. Now it's okay. I got the formula. You figured it out. Great job. Now, how can you sustain this? How can you continue to do this? And a lot of it has to do with your mindset. So you realize that, you know, making money is its own mindset, but then keeping the money and, you know, allowing that money to grow takes a completely different mindset. Like I told you before, when I first started, like I had this scarce mentality and, you know, I was afraid to lose everything. And, you know, it's one of those things where I realized I use this analogy with people is like, if you like squeezing something so hard and you're afraid to lose it so much, it's probably going to slip right out the bottom of your hand. Whereas, you know, you can't be so wide open where somebody can just grab what's in your hand, but you can't be squeezing so tight because you're going to end up losing it. So it's like this weird balance. Like I said, it's just balance of realizing, like, you know, you got to figure out a way to enjoy what you're doing, enjoy spending, you know, the fruits of your labor, but at the same time setting yourself up for the future and for longevity. Because a lot of times all the little fads or all the little like trendy things in the moment, you know, 2 years from now, nobody's going to be thinking about. So that was one thing that I always learned. And then one thing that I know that you always taught me to do that I remember now I tell everybody when it comes to like credit cards and debit cards, it's like use your credit card like it's a debit card. If you don't got the money, do not swipe that card. So, you know, I think when it came to like credit, just for me and all the people that I ever knew, you know, just growing up in poverty, like a credit card was a way that you can get a quick loan. Like, oh, you can swipe the credit card, you don't got to pay it back, and you can pay it back in little payments, and it's like, that's exactly how your credit score is 400. You know, like, so as I learned to do that, that was a quick, easy way that I was able to, like, boost up my credit by just using any payment that I was going to pay with my debit card, just use my credit card instead and then just get it to automatic payout. So it was just, like, something so small, but literally when I first met you, my credit score like maybe 530. It was something crazy bad.
It
Like
was
it was
pretty low,
bad.
I remember.
Yeah, like and you know, I didn't really understand credit. So I remember I got a little $500 secured credit card, and I just kept doing that, and that started to build, and then I started to do other things. Got a you know my loan for my car, and start like so all these little things that you start to do, and then like now you look 5 years later, you know, credit score in the 700s, and it's like, dang, like how does that happen? And I mean, it's just something that you told me that was so like small, but just like left a big print in my mind.
Well, I'm glad I could help. That's the whole point. I love that because it's so important and it's so easy. It's just, like you said, it's your mentality and what you're willing to do. And if you're going to overspend, credit cards are not for you. Just like you said, if you don't have the cash, don't use it. And I love that because it's true. But thank you for sharing your story and letting people into your world and some of the values that you bring to the table that I think we never get to see, which is important. We get to know you as the man, not the football helmet. So thank you for coming on. I
No,
appreciate
thank you for
you.
having me. Of course, of course.
And I'll see you soon.
Yes, ma'am. You take care.